production for BBC Radio 3.
This Classical Life on BBC Radio 3. Join me, Jess Gillam, and a new guest each week as we chat about the music we love and why.
It's very dance-like, and to perform it on stage is very unlike any other piece that I've played before, and I always find that the orchestra, they really enjoy that moment on stage.
In the next episode, I share music with pianist Jennifer Canet-Mason, who made her BBC Proms debut when she was just 19.
You have to be very, very fit to play a piece like this, and there's so much to absorb.
This Classical Life with Jennifer Canet-Mason. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
On 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio, on BBC Sounds and on your smart speaker, this is BBC Radio 3. And you're very welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Danielle Jaworzyńska here with you this Sunday evening. Well, now it's time for Drama on 3, The Defectors. Mixing documentary with drama, Paul French presents a programme that brings together the stories of those who made the choice to escape from one of the most secretive countries in the world, North Korea, knowing they can never return, never contact their family and former friends, and never knowing if those people closest to them were punished for their decision to flee.
The Defectors, presented by me, Paul French, with drama, written by Al Smith.
In about 20 minutes, we landing in Beijing. Please ensure your seatbelt is securely fastened and your seatbags and tray tables are in their full upright position.
It's 1998. Two young North Korean diplomats stationed in Sweden have been recalled from their posting and are en route to Pyongyang, the capital of the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, the DPRK. North Korea is in the grip of a long-running famine. The young diplomat's major job has been to secure supplies of food from Scandinavia to feed the North. Despite the severe internal crisis, Supreme Leader Kim Jong-il seeks to deflect blame for the famine with a mass purging of party cadres, diplomats and senior military officers. North Korea is a paranoid state. Even senior diplomats must travel in pairs, each constantly looking for signs that the other will run, defect.
Before the next connection, I want to make a telephone call.
Who are you calling?
My father-in-law.
Are there problems between you and your wife?
No.
Then why would you call your father-in-law?
Because he has an international line. I want to talk to him to hear if there's any colour in his voice.
You're reading too much into your telegram, Jack.
Am I?
It's just a routine trip home.
There's no such thing as a routine trip home.
It could be that they want to praise us. We're doing fine work in Stockholm.
I've heard they're cracking down hard on anyone who studied abroad.
Heard from who?
Party elder, Hyun Jin Sun.
They're political people.
No more political than you or me. I studied in Moscow.
But years ago...
The past never rests.
Did you join any political groups when you studied abroad?
No, but I knew political people.
Knew them as friends?
As acquaintances. But the third floor don't know how close we were. I could be tarred by their brush.
Your name is good, Jack. I vouched for it. It's my thumbprint on your paperwork.
See, I think they want you on a flight with me to stop me running.
And would you run?
Never, never.
Then why do you want to hear the colour in your father-in-law's voice?
Because if the worst is going to happen, I want to be prepared for it. So, may I make that telephone call? Please.
One of these two men will ultimately rise up through the ranks of the DPRK's foreign service. Trusted. Considered loyal to the Kim regime. The other will be purged by North Korean intelligence and those tasked with maintaining party discipline and loyalty to the Kim clan, known collectively as the Third Floor. His career will be over, his family banished from the privileged citadel of Pyongyang to an insignificant remote province. effectively to live in internal exile and disgrace. My name is Paul French, and I've been closely following events in North Korea for over 30 years. This is the story of those who make the choice to escape from one of the most impregnable and secretive countries in the world, knowing they can never return, never contact their family and former friends, never knowing if those people closest to them were punished for their decision to flee. Whether for a senior party loyalist in privileged Pyongyang or a struggling family faced with famine and poverty, leaving the world's most reclusive and secretive state is a monumental decision with massive ramifications. Across this programme, we'll be looking at the experiences of ordinary North Koreans who've escaped and made the perilous journey to the UK. And, through drama, we'll be telling a story about Tae Yong-ho, the North's deputy ambassador to the UK until 2016. Tae found himself faced with a life-changing and potentially deadly decision to make, to jump or not to jump, from, as Pyongyang's propaganda machine would have it, the warm and loving embrace of the dear leader. This drama is inspired by real events. Tae's journey is loosely based on events that were widely reported at the time, from interviews and from his autobiography. The timeline of events has been condensed, and we've taken some dramatic license to bring the story to life. Beyond these, the roles played by other characters, as well as scenes of family life and dialogue, are fictional. By 2016, Deputy Ambassador Tae Yong-ho had been in his ideal posting for a decade, London. Based in the North Korean embassy, which strangely occupies a Victorian semi in the West London suburb of Ealing. Tae's tasks include monitoring the North Korean exile community in Britain, liaising with the few organisations supportive of the DPRK, as well as ensuring the reputation of his country, and especially that of respected Comrade Marshal Kim Jong-un.
A barber shop?
On my child's route to school, Comrade Ambassador.
Tell it again.
It was a photograph above a caption reading, "Bad Hair Day, 15% off all gents' cuts."
A photograph of Marshal Kim Jong-un?
Yes.
And what did they say when you went in?
Nothing.
They didn't agree to take it down?
I didn't go in.
You walked past a slander like that and didn't remonstrate?
I was with my son.
That is a most offensive slight on our Supreme General Secretary's honour. How could you be so apathetic?
I apologise.
Where's the camera?
What camera?
The video camera.
Try the filing cabinet.
We must express our outrage forcefully, and then evidence of our outrage must be sent to Pyongyang.
Bottom drawer.
I find the fact that you walked past and did nothing almost as offensive as the poster itself.
Yes, comrade.
Who's coming with me?
Perhaps a sense of proportion here, Comrade Tae.
Proportion? What will they think when that image turns up on the third floor? We must respond now, and we must be seen to respond.
Just beyond the pound stretcher.
Yeah. Make sure you capture the whole interaction. Is this your establishment?
What?
Do you know who the person is in your disgraceful advertisement?
Is it that Kim Jong-un bloke?
It is the respected Comrade Marshal Kim Jong-un.
Cool. Can you come back inside 20 minutes?
The Supreme Leader of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
And you want to start filming, maybe?
I demand you take down this most egregious image this instant.
This most what image?
We would like you to take down the picture, please.
Or there will be consequences.
Consequences?
When we speak nicely, you best pay attention.
You're in England, mate. You can't just go around threatening people, yeah?
May I remind you, we are a nuclear power.
What, so you're going to drop a nuke on a barbershop on Acton High Street over a gag in a window?
It is not a joke to us, sir. It is extremely offensive.
All right. Just say that then. Jesus. Now, do you mind? I'm halfway through a tricky undercut.
Perhaps a sign of his standing in the diplomatic corps, and unlike the majority of his colleagues, Tae was allowed to live outside of the embassy compound in a flat in Ealing. He lived there with his wife, Oh Hyai-sun. This too was unusual, and down to the fact that wife Oh was from the North's elite class. Most wives and children of diplomats are kept back home as a disincentive for diplomats to defect, essentially hostages. One of their sons lived with them too and attended the local state school. Their other son remained in Pyongyang, presumably as a human bargaining chip.
Tae was very much my opposite number. I mean, he could be a right bastard if he chose to be, but he could also be absolutely charming.
Jim Hoare is a veteran expert on Korea, met Tae many times and came to know him well. He was the first chargé d'affaires at the newly opened British Embassy in Pyongyang in 2001.
His wife also chatted very happily with lots of people. They could pass. He knew how to do things in a way that many of the North Koreans didn't.
Obviously, he was wearing a mask. He was wearing the ideological mask of the regime.
Steve Evans, former BBC correspondent covering North Korea.
But as a human being, he seemed to really like London. He was part of the furniture of suburban West London.
Your bread is better than theirs.
You think?
Yeah. If you were on this show, you'd wipe the floor with these people.
Oh, I think you're biased, my love.
Was Jay's wife at the golf club?
Yes.
Did she say anything about the barbershop?
Only that you'd torn a strip off him in front of the team.
Oh, I had to. Otherwise, Guan would have reported us both.
I've cancelled your golf membership, by the way.
Hmm? Why?
Your golf coach is a former South Korean pro. There's gossip going around that you're hanging out with the wrong people. It just needs to be nipped in the bud, so I've signed you up for tennis instead.
Tennis?
A much more English sport. And takes half the time.
There's nothing more English than golf, darling.
Golf's Scottish.
Same thing.
If you think we're the only one with unification problems, my love, maybe you do need re-education. You will like tennis. Yongsop says he's played a few times at school and is looking forward to beating you.
He won't beat me if he can't get off his phone.
He hasn't got his phone. I confiscated it.
Why?
He was caught trading football cards again.
Again.
Let me handle him this time.
This time?
Please, you're too tough on him.
No, I'm not.
You are. It's confusing for him to be threatened with punishments based on how it would have been for us.
Guan thinks I'm becoming ill-disciplined. Tried to report me for not shifting enough books.
No one's going to think you're ill-disciplined after your showdown at the barber's.
Oh, I don't know. He's gaining confidence on the third floor. He's been charged with determining loyalty across the whole team.
No one doubts your loyalty.
I should hope not.
Now, come on. Help me make some bread. That show's made me hungry.
Comrade Ambassador?
The Evening Standard. Front cover.
I'll call the paper and insist it be removed.
This is London, Comrade Deputy Ambassador. That's not how it works.
Do the third floor know?
They will once Guan fires up his fax machine.
Then I suggest we explain to the papers why the image was upsetting.
Better we say nothing. We're meant to be diplomats. There isn't the slightest thing diplomatic about any of it.
Ambassador, it's the third floor on the phone.
For me?
No, for Comrade Tae.
This is the Deputy Ambassador.
You are the one in the video?
Yes.
I am to convey that the respected general is pleased.
Good.
Your video is being sent to all overseas staff. This is how one demonstrates true loyalty to the revolution.
It was my honour, comrade.
Do you remember me? It's Bae Jong-hyuk.
Bae Jong-hyuk?
From the foreign languages course.
What are you doing on the third floor?
I'm not on the third floor. I'm on the fourth. Are you by a computer?
Yes.
Check your email. A Word document, password protected.
Got it. Hold on.
Contained within is an inquiry for your eyes only. Do you understand? Keep this quiet, comrade. Totally silent, and there'll be a reward for you.
A reward?
You have two sons.
Yes.
Complete this task, and you could have your whole family with you.
I understand.
Comrade Guan, your daily list of names from the third floor. Any you recognize?
Just traitors in New Malden.
Comrade Guan, would you give us a moment? I need to speak with the ambassador.
About what?
It's not for you, Guan. Above your station.
That'll be all, Comrade Guan. See you in the morning.
Comrade ambassador?
Mm-hmm. Eric Clapton. He's coming. Here. In a fortnight.
Eric Clapton's coming to the North Korean embassy.
No. Eric Clapton's playing two nights at the Albert Hall. And Kim Jong-chul is coming to London to attend.
The Kim Jong-chul?
Yes. We are to attend the Foreign Office to arrange visas in the morning.
Take Jay.
Until I hear otherwise, I'm instructed to confide in you alone.
Then go to the Foreign Office on your own. I can't go in the morning.
This is the leader's brother.
I know, but I've an appointment.
Are you all right?
Yes. It will be our honour to host a son of great Kim Jong-il. They must have huge faith in you, Deputy Ambassador. My warmest congratulations.
Tay had been handed a poison chalice by the third floor. High-level diplomatic visits to Britain by DPRK officials were rare. Mishandling any visit, sending anyone home unhappy, was a fast way to a recall, demotion, and a life overseeing turnip quotas in a cold, remote province. While Tay Yong-ho was stationed at the DPRK's embassy in West London, a new, growing, and vibrant community of North Korean exiles was appearing in Britain, especially around the southwest London suburb of New Malden, which was becoming known as Little Pyongyang. Growing up under the rigidly controlled North Korean regime was the norm for most exiles. They lived childhoods within the embrace of the party state and its hermit kingdom ideology of limited contact with the outside and total devotion to the supreme leaders of the Kim family. In the wake of the collapse of the DPRK's major backer, the Soviet Union, oil supplies dried up. Electricity, heating, pharmaceuticals, fertilizer were all in short supply. People ate all the crops, and then the next season's seeds. They ate their livestock, and eventually became too weak to farm as weeds took over the fields.
Chongjin is most the first places its people died of starvation.
This is Ji-hyun Park. She was born in Chongjin, North Korea's third largest city and a major port.
I usually saw dead bodies in street, in market, in stations, everywhere. And when we woke up, then we heard which neighbors died.
They were literally about to die of hunger and stuff, so...
This is Segway. At least, that's what his friends in Little Pyongyang call him. Segway's grandfather suffered a seemingly mysterious fate, all too common in North Korea at the time, for saying the wrong thing in the wrong place.
He was drinking and he was a bit drunk, and then he got a bit heated in an argument with his friend. And then he said something along the lines of, like, you know, like, if I was a leader, you know, I could have done so much of a better job. Like, what is this trash of a country? Something like that. And then a friend snitched on him, and then he got caught and he was never seen again.
As is the custom in North Korea, all of Segway's family were punished for his grandfather's ill-judged comments.
So they got sent out from the city, and then they went like really far up north. And because of that, my dad had a really hard time living in North Korea.
Desperate, exiled to the provinces, so many black marks against him, any decent job, housing or future seemed impossible. And this was at a time when the famine was at its deadly height.
There was this actually one time where my mom cooked me a food that they used to eat regularly because they don't have like rice or anything. They would like use flours and then just eat that. I tried it. I was like, how did you eat that for 24/7? And she was like, oh, it wasn't even 24/7. It was like probably just once or even lucky like twice in 2 or 3 days.
So during that time was winter. I left the home because it's winter and dark. So nobody see who's left home. So that's why we choose this early morning.
The decision to leave is always clandestine. If others know, neighbours, workmates, friends. They could betray you, knowing they themselves could be severely punished. Ji-hyun Park was forced to leave her sick father. Like many younger people who defect, she knew her chances of ever seeing him again, of ever speaking to him again, were virtually zero. Desperate men, women and children, like Ji-hyun, headed north to the Chinese border and the towns along the Yalu River. During the famine, many so-called ants, mostly women, regularly crisscrossed the border with China across the Yalu River, smuggling food, cigarettes, cheap clothing.
My grandma would risk her life to go to China to get food and come back.
With so little left to lose, Segwe's grandmother decided to run.
She was just going to escape by herself. But then, because she knew what happened to her husband, my granddad, she was like, no, you know, I can't let my kids die in North Korea. So she like called them up and like, look, you guys have to come. It's do or die, yeah? It's now or never. Like, even if they go to prison or even if they die, at least they'll eat something and then die. That was the beginning of our escape.
Running, defection. It's a constant but mostly unspoken fear of every North Korean diplomat. If your colleague defects, then you will be punished. If you defect, then your family will be punished, harshly. In 1998, Tae and his colleague Jang had been ordered to return to Pyongyang, unsure who was for promotion and who for purging. If either one of them ran, the other would be punished severely, along with his entire family.
Air Korea Flight 28 to Pyongyang.
During their stopover in Beijing Airport, Tae had acquiesced to Jang's request to phone home to see if he could pick up any indication of the fate that awaited them.
Beijing, we're just waiting for our connection.
Jang, come on.
Father-in-law, have you had any visitors of late? Anyone asking after me?
We can't miss the flight, Jang.
Nothing out of the ordinary. Thank you.
Well?
Nothing.
Oh, good. Let's go.
Yeah, but he's a talker. He always talks. Normally you can't shut him up.
Maybe he's tired.
Or he's holding something back.
Last call for Air Korea Flight 28 to Pyongyang.
We could both wait here.
I'm not running.
Just say we missed the flight.
No. I'm not afraid to face criticism, Jang. And neither are you. Come on. We'll be okay.
Okay.
That was 1998. Now, 18 years later, despite Tae's position as deputy ambassador in London, the basic principles of surveillance and family punishment remained the same in Kim Jong-un's DPRK. The third floor always knows. The third floor is always watching. Tae had been tasked with chaperoning the half-brother of North Korea's supreme leader on a visit to London. A trap in disguise? A one-way ticket home to the cold, bleak provinces? But should he pull it off, perhaps doors that had remained firmly locked would suddenly swing open.
Sangnam?
Yes.
And they know Yongsop is already here?
Kim Jong-un wants young people to be more competitive. So he said a few senior cadres can have their children join them abroad.
Without an anchor back home?
Yes.
When will Sangnam be here?
After the visit, but only if the visit is perfect. The ambassador wants the embassy redecorated. Do you still have the paint from Yongsop's bedroom?
The ambassador wants you to redecorate the embassy?
Not me. You.
Anything to bring our boy here.
Thank you. Now, where's the hammer?
Who brings a hammer to a meeting at the Foreign Office?
I'm sorry.
I nearly put the whole place on lockdown.
It's for my next appointment.
Hopefully you're not off to get your hair cut.
No.
Good. How can I help?
A comrade intends to visit London in a fortnight. I would like to arrange a visa rather more expressly than usual.
Who's the comrade?
I've written the names down here.
I know him and him. Oh, who's this?
An advisor.
An advisor?
Yes.
And how long will this advisor be in the UK?
3 days.
Has this advisor been to the UK before?
He has travelled, but not to the UK.
Where's he travelled before?
Switzerland.
Right. So I take it this guy's a rather high-level advisor?
Very.
The highest level or a step removed?
A half step.
Okay. Deputy Ambassador Tay, wouldn't it be very much easier if you just made it an official visit? That way I can offer you all the protection he needs. Armoured cars, appropriate security.
The visit is to remain entirely unofficial.
And how are you going to get him around town, if not in an official vehicle?
We'll find a way.
Well, you can't use your embassy's car if it's unofficial. And I doubt you're going to stick Kim Jong-chul on a tube.
We will handle the advisor ourselves. All I need is a visa.
Okay. Then I'll call when it's ready.
Thank you.
I do always find it baffling.
What?
All these Swiss schools and trips to Harrods when half your country is starving.
Harrods is not on the itinerary.
But the hypocrisy's not lost on you, is it, Mr. Tay?
Why not spare your thoughts on income inequality for the homeless guy outside?
I enjoy our conversations, Tay, particularly when you're unshadowed.
Thank you.
Should you ever wish to continue talking so openly, you will call me. It won't ever flag up as Foreign Office.
Good day, Miss Kitchener.
He was a very good ambassador, with a small a, for North Korea, if you like.
One of Tay's responsibilities was relations with those in the UK sympathetic to the DPRK. It's not a huge group of people. Meetings may be small, but attendees are dedicated. Steve Evans again.
He knew the language, literally with English, but also he knew that language of Marxism. He could engage in the arguments, he knew the terms, and he was very convincing. He became popular with the kind of people that the regime in Pyongyang would have wanted him to be popular with.
Reputation was everything, and it was Tay's job to ensure the portraits of North Korean leaders, past and present, took pride of place, above Marx and Lenin, the glass polished, the frames straight. The third floor saw the videos of these meetings.
18th century oak, that. Might be a pub on the surface, but underneath, ale house for 300 years.
They're only small tacks.
With 2 hours in hand, I thought I'd beat you to it.
Plenty of space either side for Lenin and Marx.
I need to give you your books back. I tried to shift them, but I'm finding it a struggle.
How is it a struggle to give a history of the Kim family to members of the Korean Allyship Foundation?
There's only 25 of us, and there were hundreds in the box. In the last month, I've only managed to shift 10, and half of those were to my parents and in-laws.
Then, at the very least, let's hope they enjoyed it.
Well, they did. Yeah, loved it. Last book my father ever read, as it goes.
Oh, Ron. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
My condolences, comrade. It was an honour to meet him.
Thanks. Can I ask about the messages?
Messages?
All the congratulatory messages. I know you want the group to send cards, but do we really need to send so many?
Yes.
Well, New Year's anniversary, Kim Jong-un's birthday, Kim Jong-il's birthday, Kim Il-sung's birthday, Kim Jong-suk's birthday, the anniversary of the Collective Works, North Korean Army Foundation Day, Korean War Day, Day of Victory in the Great Fatherland Liberation War Day, Central Committee Day, and that's just up to June.
Ron, every time a new letter is received, it is widely reported in the press. That news is vital for reminding the Korean people that they have the support of the International Brotherhood.
I understand.
Now, if you don't mind...
I want to give you my father's flat.
Sorry?
When I sell it, my half, I want you to have the cash. Should be 100 grand or so?
No.
I know it sounds a bit wild, but it's nothing compared to what your fellow comrades have had to suffer through the famine.
Ron, it is important to us that you live comfortably here so that you may continue to spread the word.
But I'm all right, and I want to help more, so please, tell your comrades in Pyongyang about my offer.
You're a generous man, comrade.
Might want to adjust your portrait of Kim Jong-il. Looks like he's tilting a little too much to the left. If you can believe it.
Gunnersbury Avenue, please. Number 73.
Need a hand with the boxes?
No, thanks.
I'll take that end. Always remember from the knees. That the North Korean embassy opposite the Red Lion?
Yes.
Nice pub, that. Good for football, if that's what you like.
No. But my son does.
Has he got a team?
I don't know.
Get him into Spurs. They've got Son Heung-min. He's from your neck of the woods, isn't he?
Son Heung-min is from the south.
That's it. Legend. So that's where you're going, is it? North Korean embassy?
We say the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
Forgive me. That's your business, is it?
I'm the deputy ambassador.
All right. Well, there's something to tell the wife. Bit of a black hole for me, Asian history. Listen to a lot of podcasts, but not up to spec on that stuff. I'm big into the Romans.
I can give you a book, if you like.
Oh, yeah? That's what you've got in there. Books.
That's right. Many, many copies.
Yeah, I'd love one. Thank you. What's your name?
Tae Yong Ho.
Hello, Tae. My name's Ken.
Ken, may I ask, are you available for a longer-term hire?
What do you need?
We have a group of advisors coming to stay, and I could do with some help for their trip. I need to find a top-quality hotel.
Well, I'll drive you about, show you a few places if you like.
Thank you. And beyond tonight, are you available for a longer hire? 3 days, maybe four?
For the right price, sure.
I'd need you on call for the whole time.
Again, can probably manage. How many of you are there?
5, maybe 6 people.
Might want something a bit bigger then. My brother-in-law's got a limo.
A limousine?
Top of the range. It's a lovely ride.
That would be ideal. I also need a fine dining restaurant and to purchase tickets for the Albert Hall.
Right. What is it you're off to see?
Have you heard the music of Eric Clapton?
Old slow hand, of course. That might even have a few of his albums on the phone.
Then him. We're seeing him.
Shall we start with the Dorchester? Take it from there.
Thank you.
And which album do you want to start with?
I really don't know.
Let's start from the beginning then. But you didn't think I knew how to
rock and roll. A few DPRK embassies around the world run on very tight budgets. As the VIP visit drew closer, Tay had to dig deep into the embassy's ever-straightened coffers to spruce up the building. Even wives were enlisted to clean and repaint the interior.
Oh, you've made the embassy better than the Mansudae Assembly Hall.
Thanks. But I bet the comrade decorators didn't get as much paint in their eyes.
Deputy Ambassador, where have you been?
Preparing one. Why?
You went to the Foreign Office alone.
I was charged to do so by direct order.
If you had no one to go with, I should have attended.
The ambassador didn't want you to go.
I demand to know who we are expecting.
That is not your demand to make.
I will report these breaches to the third floor.
These breaches are instructions from the third floor. Is there anything else?
No.
Then good evening, comrade. What are you laughing at?
I like it when you use your authoritative voice.
He's a little turd. Let's go home. Come on.
Just want to finish this corner.
Then let me help.
In the North Korea of the 1990s and early 2000s, a growing number of families were deciding to leave.
During my time, I think, when I was born, North Korea went through the hardship. A lot of people died and famine.
At the time, Yeo-jin was just 11. Her mother, like Segway's grandmother, was regularly crossing the border to China during the famine, trading to survive. And then one day, she decided not to return. Yeo-jin was left with extended family in the north,
with no idea if and when her mother would return for her. Just her mother's promise to hold on to.
I always had the hope that someday someone will come and get me. I had that kind of trust in my mom.
Her mother had no way to get word to her daughter without risking the authorities discovering their escape plans.
Someday I was at home, just living normal life in North Korea, and then someone approached me, said, I've got news for you. This is from your mom, and basically she wants for me to come to China.
That someone was a broker, a North Korean from the border area, hired by Yeorjin's mother to get her young daughter across the Yalu River and into China safely.
Without any hesitation, I said yes. Any strangers, you know, approach to you and say something, then you will, you know, do it. It's like either die or just leave.
The exiles make their way north to the Chinese border, hitching rides on open-back trucks, piling onto overcrowded trains, or simply on foot. They have to avoid identity checks, police patrols, army stop and search points. But eventually, they reach the border area.
I think it was June, and water was very deep. It was very dark, I couldn't really locate myself, and I was very young.
Some pay brokers to show them the best crossing points. Others pay bribes to the border guards, as hungry as them, usually. A few take their chances alone. At any point, they could be turned back, arrested, and sent to camps for those trying to escape. They could be shot. Ji-hyun Park had been urged to run by her dying father, wanting to help her younger brother who had gone AWOL from the army, unable to bear the terrible conditions in the North Korean military, and who now had to flee. Now brother and sister finally reached the Yalu.
So during that time was winter, but when I crossed the halfway, and then North Korean soldiers, they already found out to us, and then stop, and after they gunfired. So when they gunfired, I was frozen, I was scared. But then my younger brother, sister, wake up, and then he holding my hand, and then we crossed the halfway, and after we arrived in China.
China appeared to be another world. The border city of Dandong, ablaze with light. The heavily ethnic Korean villages and towns of Yanbian and Changbai on the Chinese side of the border, full of cars, neon signs, restaurants. But having crossed the border and escaped North Korea into China merely means a new set of dangers. The Chinese government has a policy of repatriating defectors. Bounty hunters, police, and border guards all hunt them down.
Crossing the river isn't the hardest part. It's in China that's the hardest part, because there are a lot of people who's willing to do anything for money.
Segway's whole family managed to successfully cross the Yalu and enter China. It was hard to remain inconspicuous.
Living in China was what they wanted to do. But then you see stories about North Korean escapees getting caught in China, going back straight to North Korea and getting executed. Like, who would live in fear of that, you know? We had like 9 people in one room, and then every night you hear someone like coming, walking up to your house. One of us will be awake, you know, guarding the door. As soon as we hear or notice someone snitched on us, we leave through the back room, and then we do that again for 2 years.
All North Korean exiles in China are hunted, and many are exploited. Naturally, many choose to keep their experiences of escape to themselves, still too painful, often considered too shameful. Ji-hyun Park, who was chosen to become an activist and tell her story, had crossed into China with her brother, but soon found herself trapped in a human trafficking ring.
So then man paid money, but man told me that I bought only you, not your brother. So my brother told me that, sister, you have to go, you have to survive.
Separated from her brother, she was sold into a forced marriage with a local farmer more than 15 years older than her.
People can't imagine this North Korean woman and girl's life in China. I was sold this 5,000 yuan.
That's less than £400. She described herself as a slave. Later, she gave birth to a son. She managed to survive. But when her son was 5 years old, Ji-hyun was betrayed and repatriated to North Korea. She was placed in a forced labor camp. Her story is distressing, but sadly not uncommon, particularly of female defectors from the north.
When I stayed in the labor camp, I was almost deaf, But my 5 years old son still in China. So my son is my last family. So my dream was that one day I want to reunite my son. So that is a kind of strength which survived for me.
Ji-hyun was in the worst of worlds. A traitor to the DPRK returned and imprisoned in a labor camp. Her son still in China, but with no way for them to contact each other. Ji-hyun's situation seemed hopeless. A freedom almost found, only to be cruelly lost. Back in 1998, junior diplomat Tae and his colleague Jang had been summoned back from their posting in Sweden to Pyongyang. They didn't know why, but they knew the North Korean capital was in the midst of both a deadly famine and a prolonged round of high-level political purging. Tae feared it may be him about to be purged. A minor post in a godforsaken backwater, or a bullet to the back of the head. The third floor had mentioned Danish cheese. In the month leading up to his recall, Tae had organised a shipment of over 3,000 tonnes of feta cheese, donated by a Danish company to be sent to the starving north. Tae knew that any food he could supply might save lives, but it had taken time. The DPRK didn't have a cargo ship capable of such a long voyage. His humanitarian appeals to the Danes may have been seen as an admission of the terrible situation in Kim Jong-il's DPRK. The country and the supreme leader losing face. Capital crimes to the third floor.
Comrade Jang, Comrade Tae, your services to the Swedish embassy are noted, and we are grateful for your return.
Why are we here, comrade?
Jang, your father was caught selling iron powder to Chinese businessmen, and has been executed.
And, what will become of me?
Given you are the child of a purged senior cadre, you will be sent to the far provinces.
And my mother?
She is already there. You will write a letter to your wife in Stockholm, informing her that she must return to your side, or you will be purged too. Is it understood?
Yes.
Comrade Tae, you will return to Stockholm in the morning and hand-deliver Jang's letter to her. Is it understood?
Comrade.
Jang, you are dismissed.
How was he executed, my father?
Shot. Write your letter.
Comrade.
You have done well bringing him back, Comrade Tae. The supreme leader was already pleased with you, but now...
I am honored to please him.
Kim Jong-il has been desperate for good news. Anything to improve the spirits of the army during this arduous march. And your delivery to Namphor Port.
The army?
Yes.
I had understood the food was to feed children.
One third of the population guards the front line, comrade. To feed the army is to feed the children.
Of course. Forgive me, I'm... rather rattled by Comrade Jang's father.
He was a traitor. It must be accepted.
Comrade.
In light of your service to the Army of the People's Republic, you, Tae Yong-ho, are awarded the Hero of Labour Medal.
Thank you.
The Supreme Leader commands me to offer you anything.
Anything?
Ask for anything, and it will be granted.
I ask that my wife becomes a party member.
Your wife? Is that all?
I would like for her to become a party member so that she may travel with me abroad.
Do you have children?
Not yet. We're newly married.
If you did, would she stay behind, or the child?
We'd work that out, but my mother is desperate to be a grandmother, so...
Good. Do you have a sense of where you wish to be posted?
I was selected to learn English. I would like to be posted next, somewhere where I can use it.
There is talk of opening an embassy in London.
Then London is where I would choose. For me and my wife.
A humble request. A mark of your service. I will see it is done.
Thank you, comrade.
Tae had played the long game. As a party member, his wife could now join him on his foreign postings. At the time, North Korean diplomats could just bring one child out the country with them, so only one of their sons could accompany them. But now, many years later, the third floor had mooted the possibility of bringing their second son to London too. The family reunited and all out of North Korea. But first, they had to deal with Kim Jong-chul, who had never shown any interest in politics, but only in Eric Clapton, of whom he was an acknowledged superfan. Nonetheless, any close relative of the supreme leader, ranking member of the ruling Kim clan, must be treated like royalty. Careers, lives, even the fate of children could depend on ensuring the Kim family member is happy. The entire embassy knew this only too well as they awaited their special guest at Heathrow Airport.
A reminder, the third floor don't want any honorifics muttered.
Then how do we address him?
You don't address him at all. When the advisor comes, only I speak with him. Is that clear?
Yes, Comrade Ambassador.
And you, Comrade T, you will find us another vehicle. This vehicle you have sourced is a gross embarrassment.
Yes, Comrade Ambassador.
It is what you said you wanted.
You said a limousine.
It is a limousine.
It's a hot pink limousine with a glitter ball.
It's cherry red and extremely sought after, Mr. Tate.
It's an embarrassment. Once we're at the hotel, I demand an alternative.
All right, all right. That him?
Welcome. Welcome to London, Comrade Advisor. The car is right this way.
Comrade Hill.
Hey, old friend. How are you?
Fine. This way, please. The limousine's just outside.
That's the vehicle. A pink limousine.
It's cherry red, comrade.
I told you this trip had to be perfect.
It will be. I've demanded an alternative vehicle once we get to the Chelsea View.
Are you sure they don't want to crack a window back there, Mr. Tay?
If he wishes, he will.
Just with all the smoke, I'm starting to lose visibility through the rear view mirror.
Just drive. Thank you. Yes, comrade.
The advisor asks to turn on the glitter ball.
Yes, comrade.
I knew he'd like it.
And he wishes to go to HMV.
Take us to HMV on Oxford Street.
HMV? It's 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, mate. It'll be shut.
HMV is closed until the morning, but I have purchased compact discs of Eric Clapton's entire back catalogue, if the advisor would care to choose one.
Give me the CDs.
You all right, mate?
Fine. Just drive.
He is excited to listen to Layla.
Good choice.
Is he asleep?
He's drinking whiskey with the ambassador.
Right. Good.
I met your son at the academy. I went to witness a rehearsal for the Liberation Day march and asked for an introduction.
Oh.
He is a diligent student.
Thank you, comrade.
Trousers!
Comrade Ambassador?
He packed only one pair of trousers. He wants them dry cleaned by the morning.
Ambassador Hyun, it's 2 a.m.
Isn't London a 24-hour city?
2 a.m. on a Monday morning.
The most respected leader's brother wants his trousers dry cleaned by morning.
On the plane journey, Kim Jong-chul had spilled wine on his trousers. The hotel couldn't be persuaded to launder them in time for the morning, so Tay and his embassy staff drove around London all night searching for a 24-hour laundromat. Denying the request of the half-brother of the supreme leader was never an option.
Trousers, dry cleaned and pressed.
Good.
Is he awake?
He's drinking in the bath with the ambassador.
They're both in the bath.
No, the ambassador's at the bathroom door, but they're both at the whiskey.
Good. Well, when he is ready, I've arranged a tour of London's most prestigious sites. The vehicle is ready and waiting.
He doesn't want to have a tour of London. He wants to buy a guitar.
An entire street of guitar shops. Imagine such a thing in Pyongyang.
Oh, why are you so tired?
I didn't sleep. I wanted to hear some more Eric Clapton and discovered you could listen to music on the internet.
You didn't know that? You're the cultural attaché.
Take us to Colchester.
Ambassador?
Driver! The advisor wishes to go to Colchester.
Now?
Yes. Why now?
Well, there's a guitar he wants, and the man in the shop says it's only available in Colchester. We must leave immediately.
We have to get to the Albert Hall at 7. And Colchester's a what?
2-hour drive away.
If we go there now, we won't make it back in time.
How about I take you to Colchester in the morning?
I'll ask. But if we don't get that guitar, he will be most upset.
Yes, Comrade Ambassador.
The older brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a rare public appearance in London earlier this week. The 33-year-old Kim Jong-chul at an Eric Clapton concert...
It is unclear just how the international media got tipped off that Kim Jong-chul was at the Albert Hall. But the half-brother of North Korea's notorious leader was photographed entering the venue, surrounded by Tay and embassy officials. He was dressed simply in a grey T-shirt, a leather jacket, and a pair of very clean and freshly pressed trousers.
Oh, what's on that? Did you enjoy it?
Are you in London, please, Mr. Kim? Are you in London?
How's your relationship with your brother?
Tay tried to keep him away from the swarm of paparazzi, but the press bombarded Kim with questions about his family and the contrast with the lives of ordinary people in North Korea. Tay's attempts to keep Kim's visit to London quiet had failed. This was a potential diplomatic disaster that had happened on his watch.
Is he pictured?
Pictured and named with the headline, Kim's in Heaven.
I've been so careful, Hugh. I don't know how the press knew.
Someone must have said.
We've kept it locked down even inside the embassy.
Could be the Foreign Office.
They were worried about security. It won't be them.
The limo driver?
I don't think so.
Then what about the Comrade Ambassador himself? I hear his enthusiasm's wavering. That he left you to sort the visas alone?
I assure you, the Comrade Ambassador is fully committed.
He doesn't need to be invited home for a struggle session.
No.
Well, the advisor wants to go back.
On an early flight?
To the Albert Hall. He liked the show so much, he's keen to see it again tonight. Just this time, he hopes the press get his best side.
Mr. Tate!
What is it?
That mosaic floor I was telling you about is down here.
Not now, Ken.
I hear it's really worth it.
The advisor wishes to purchase his guitar, then return to London immediately.
The guitar cost nearly £2,500. Kim refused Tay's offers to carry it for him and kept it strapped to his chest all the way back to London. Tay described it as like a father hugging his young child.
I've been reading that book you give me. I thought all American music was banned.
It is.
Then how come he's playing American Pie?
Just drive, please, Ken.
If there's kids starving over there, how is it he's shilling out for guitars worth £2,000?
Please, silence.
Think as a father for a second. It's just plain wrong.
After watching Eric Clapton for a second night at the Albert Hall, Kim Jong-chul flew back to Pyongyang. A few days later, an official message arrived from the third floor. It said that the London comrades had successfully carried out an important task and that respected comrade Kim Jong-un praised the embassy's work. By contrast, when Tay's wife and son learned about the events of the last few days and who exactly Tay had been entertaining, they expressed outrage at the regime's profligacy and hypocrisy, and at Tay for his role in enabling them. Any sense of relief or pride that Tay may have felt at successfully navigating this torturous mission was short-lived, replaced by feelings of self-recrimination, even disgust. Later, he would write that his actions were akin to a prisoner taking care of a prison warden. For those exiles crossing the Yalu River, Jihyun, Segway's family, Yeojin, and many others, leaving North Korea and entering China was really just the start of a new danger. Yet amongst the perils, there are some friendly faces, support groups that operate clandestinely in China to help defectors move onwards.
They have this connection, like, you know, everyone knew, the broker knew this missionary people, and, you know, everything is connected. So without those connections, I wouldn't be here, yeah.
Over the decades, routes out of China have changed and varied. Back around 2002, there was a spate of wall jumpings into foreign embassies in Beijing. The Chinese authorities, embarrassed, erected high fences, poured soldiers into the city's embassy district and upped their vigilance, and promised bounty payments for captured North Korean refugees. And so other routes appeared, all of them utilised by those desperate to finally escape. These included stowing away on cargo boats at the northern Chinese port of Dalian, or making the long trek across China to its fairly porous southwestern borders with Myanmar, Laos and Vietnam, or acquiring forged documents to board planes from Chinese airports to South Korea, or, amazingly, travelling across the Gobi to Ulaanbaatar. Segway and his family chose this route, across 400 miles of desert, from the Chinese border to the Mongolian capital. The Gobi is vast, inhospitable, largely unpopulated, while the freezing temperatures made it perilous for Segway's parents and their infant children. But the snow had its advantages.
So when you fall down, like when the guards check with the lights, you can't see because the snow covers you. Because the snow comes up to your knees. So once everyone lies flat down, like you can't see them from far away. So there were spiral fences and there were all spikes and stuff.
Segway's father and uncle improvised.
They were like wrap around their clothes with their hands and towels and then grab onto the fence and they hold it whilst all the like women and kids go through. They were like celebrating after crossing one fence, right? But then they walked and they saw another one and they're like, okay, you know what? Yeah, we'll do it again. Did it again and then they see another one. And then they had to do that like around 6-7 times and they were like, when is this ending?
But for those persistent enough, strong enough, determined enough, there is hope.
They kept going, didn't give up. They got inside, but then they got caught by the Mongolian soldiers. But thankfully, because they're allied with South Koreans, they didn't send us back. They took us in. We were imprisoned for, I think, a week or so. And then after that, Korean embassy came and collected us, and then we went straight to South Korea.
Ji-hyun Park first escaped across the Yalu in 1998, before being sold into slavery and then forcefully repatriated to North Korea, leaving her 5-year-old son behind in China. Miraculously, friends were able to buy her out of the labour camp, paying off corrupt guards. Her determination wasn't dimmed. In 2004, she crossed the Yalu a second time, retracing her steps in China, finding her son, and together fleeing towards the Mongolian border.
I was really scared. But someone came to me and ran up my son and holding my hand. And then we just ran, and then crossed the second Chinese border. And then ran, I don't know how much ran.
But Ji-hyun had no money for brokers and knew nothing of Mongolia or the sheer vastness of the Gobi. The chill winds, the freezing cold combined with heavy snows that caused temperatures to drop to as low as minus 50 degrees Celsius for days on end. What Mongolians call Zud. And even those who've lived for generations on the steppe fear it.
But we didn't find any soldiers or any people in 3 days. And then our food is gone and water's gone. So first time my son is thirsty, hungry. So then I decided, oh, I cannot die in this desert.
Eventually, Ji-hyun found another way out of China, crisscrossing the country a wanted exile. She never once gave up hope that she would finally get herself and her son to freedom. After the Kim Jong-chul visit to London, the Third Floor rated Deputy Ambassador Tae Yong-ho's loyalty and work ethic as impeccable. This coincided with a change of official policy. Kim Jong-un ordered that the university-aged children of diplomats were to be allowed overseas to study and improve the DPRK's elite talent pool. At long last, the family of four were reunited under the same roof again, all together in London, a feat that neither Tae nor his wife Oh had thought would ever be possible.
Are they asleep?
Young-sub said he wanted a sleepover with Sang-nam, so I've just dragged the mattress through.
Isn't he a little old for that?
Just making up for lost time.
Or maybe he just wants to be close to the PlayStation. Told you, you didn't need to worry about them drifting apart.
Sangnam says Yongsop sounded different. Hasn't seen him since his voice broke.
Yeah, he's spoken to him enough times on the phone.
Yongsop's not a boy anymore. He holds himself differently. Has your posture.
Doesn't look anything like me.
His frame's the same. Stands like the man I first met.
Yuck, excuse me, if you cancel my golf membership, you're not allowed to complain about my weight.
I'm teasing. I never dreamt we'd all be under the same roof again. A family. Not here.
Me neither.
I quite want to sleep on their floor too.
I'll remind you of that when they start playing FIFA at 5 a.m.
It was a time for celebration. Indeed, all the embassy staff could finally breathe again, with their guest Kim Jong-chul safely back in Pyongyang.
Oh, he was singing, standing with his arms up, roaring.
I don't think I've ever seen a man so happy. And you, Teddy.
Team effort.
You are a first-grade cadre.
You have pieced this together. Every consideration.
Even the comrade advisor's trousers.
Layla, you got me on my knees. Layla, begging, darling,
Ambassador.
Please. Layla.
Ambassador.
Oh, Guang, don't shut the party down.
Allow us a moment to celebrate.
No.
While the success of Kim Jong-chul's visit was still ringing in the ears of the London embassy staff, an event thousands of miles away in China was about to bring an abrupt halt to the celebrations. The third floor oversaw a number of North Korean-run and staffed businesses, mostly in China, noodle restaurants with some karaoke. It was all part of the so-called Dollars for Kim project, aimed specifically at earning foreign currency for the regime's elite. But it carried risk. In March 2016, a dozen North Korean restaurant waitresses in China defected en masse to South Korea. A stunning group defection. It would send shockwaves through all of the DPRK's foreign delegations.
Deputy Ambassador, your eldest son is to return to Pyongyang.
Why?
Why doesn't matter. The third floor decides. The eldest children of foreign ambassadors are to return at the most immediate opportunity, your son included.
Then allow him to finish his term?
He hasn't even started.
If the intention of the respected comrade is to improve the talent pool...
The respected comrade's intention has changed.
He is really rattled by these defections, Yongho.
But my son is an honest soul. His ideological status was certified by the Socialist Patriotic Youth League.
Your son has ridden his luck. He goes back immediately.
You're enjoying this, Guan, aren't you?
Comrade Tay.
Is it my role you want?
I used to look up to you, Comrade Tay.
Did you tip off the Japanese press at the Albert Hall?
But people who live here too long start to forget the revolution, the arduous
march. And the Gulf. It was you who reported that.
They forget why they serve.
I bet you even undermined our comrade ambassador with the third floor.
I don't trust you, Tay. I think this honour, these awards are a front. You've been here too long to keep your personal desires at bay.
I am a hero of labour.
And you're on my list. Your son returns to the fatherland, or you do too.
In the wake of the waitress's defection, those North Koreans abroad came under intense scrutiny. Embassy computers were checked. Diplomats were quizzed about whether they were watching South Korean movies, TV. The waitresses had, so the third floor said, and it had driven them mad. The traditional hostage policy of keeping families divided was reinstated. Tay knew he didn't have long before his family would be separated again.
I do think he was very, very devoted to his children.
Former British chargé d'affaires in Pyongyang, Jim Hoare.
But he never, ever gave any hint whatsoever to me of defecting, apart from talking about his children.
Steve Evans, former BBC Korea correspondent.
I've got no doubt that he had a particular moment, a fork in the road, where he could either go back to Pyongyang, and Pyongyang is a pretty miserable place. His son would be educated there, if educated is the right word, or they would make a break for it.
Waitresses!
A group of waitresses.
Sang-nam has only just arrived.
And we must be thankful even for that.
Don't children have the right to live with their parents?
He will attend the embassy tomorrow and return via Beijing at the end of the week.
You haven't answered me.
My love, let's be grateful. Most children never even leave their village, let alone see a city in North Korea.
All the more reason that we cannot return our child to that suffering.
We don't have a choice.
We do have a choice. Both our boys are here. We can make a choice to stay.
Oh, don't speak of this.
Just look at how Kim Jong-chul acted when he was here.
You don't know how he acted.
I saw what you were putting through on our bank cards. Meals in the Shard, hundreds on concert tickets, thousands on guitars.
It was my honour to assist him.
How is that honourable? I know how hard it is for you, Yong-ho. But now that our boys are together, let us open our eyes to the hypocrisy of it all. Let us do something.
You are asking me to turn against them.
It's not you turning against them, my love. The way they live, it is they who have always had their backs turned on us.
For perhaps obvious reasons, Tae Yong-ho and the British intelligence services have been tight-lipped about the mechanism of his defection. We can speculate, as we've done elsewhere in the drama, and here we are definitely speculating. Perhaps a friendly caddy during one of Tae's golf lessons, a contact at the local tennis club over post-match G&Ts, an undercover waiter in his favourite curry house in Ealing. I wanted to learn more about the process, so I spoke to Gordon Carrera, author and co-host of the podcast The Rest is Classified, who has spent 20 years covering the activities of the UK's spy agencies.
An absolute function of British intelligence is to be open for people who might be offering themselves to defect. So there's different ways, obviously, and it's a kind of complicated thing. Sometimes people are approached and sometimes they offer, but actually being aware of who might offer or who you might approach and having a kind of understanding of who they are, that is part of the job that they'll do. So sometimes you get people who are trying to give off signals subtly. Sometimes they'll do a cold approach and they would literally just walk in out of the blue to the British Embassy, MI5 or whatever. Quite risky, quite difficult, even in the UK, but not impossible. And sometimes it will be because they've been kind of approached by Britain, which will just be testing the waters with anyone and everyone, even if they're the less likely candidate.
One of the most famous Cold War defection cases is that of KGB Colonel Oleg Gordievsky, who had been an MI6 asset for over 10 years before making a break for it.
When you see someone defect, you don't know whether that is just a defection or whether it is the end of an agent in place who's been providing secrets for years. And then you'd be asking the question, why now are they getting out? And the answer could be because he's got his family together or because he's worried he's about to get caught, is the classic one. And the problem is, this is all speculative, and it's very hard to prove.
So, how did the defection of a high-level DPRK official go down? The short answer is we don't know, but this is drama, with all the ingredients of an espionage thriller worthy of Le Carré or Slow Horses. So, caveats laid bare. Sit back and listen to our version of events.
A pizza restaurant.
Directly to the south of the tube station.
There must be a million pizza restaurants in Shepherd's Bush.
She said it was obvious.
Do you know what you're going to say?
I think she'll do most of the talking.
But she'll know what we're after.
She knows Korea. And she knows I wouldn't ask for a meeting alone somewhere so private unless it concerned a matter as significant as this.
But you're not alone, you're with me.
Yeah, you're not a minder, though, are you?
You told her I was coming too.
Yes. She'll know what we want. Stand on the light, my love.
Don't look, but I think Juan's behind us.
How far back?
Just getting on the escalator now. Don't look.
Can't tell if I can't turn around.
I'm going to drop my keys. Look back when you pick them up.
It's him.
Let's go home.
No.
I can't carry on with this. Let's go home.
We have to do it today.
He'll follow us. Please, can we go home?
He won't follow us. He'll follow me. When we get out of the tube, there's a shopping center directly ahead with a chemist in the back. Let's both go into the mall, but as soon as we're inside, you go to the chemist, and I'll split off to the bathroom. Bran will follow me, not you. Tap your card, love.
And then what?
I don't know. But I'll find you in the pizza restaurant.
Okay. He's just seen me looking.
It's okay. Cross over. That's the shopping center. Once Guan follows me toward the bathrooms, leave the chemist and go to the restaurant.
What does she look like?
She has brown hair. About down to the shoulder, she looks about 35. Do you see the chemist?
Yes.
Then go.
What if you don't show?
I will. Go. Guan!
What are you doing here, Deputy Ambassador?
Just going to the chemist.
Well, have you left your wife on her own?
I need to use the gents. What are you doing here?
I'm going to the chemist, too.
See you in there, then.
Oh, wait.
Wait.
It's best we're not alone.
Okay. But I may be a while. I've got an upset stomach.
Oh, wait.
Suit yourself. Miss Kitchener, there's a man from the embassy following us. He thinks I'm still in the men's toilets on the ground floor of the shopping centre opposite. He cannot know that I am here.
Is he still waiting there?
Yes.
Mike, can you sort that?
Sort it?
If he's still there, hustle him away.
Hustle him how?
I don't know, Mike. Figure something out.
What does he look like?
They've got the same haircut. I'm guessing you're not here to tell me about Eric Clapton.
No. Not quite.
A fortnight ago, you sounded fully committed to the DPRK. What's changed?
I was reminded of a promise I once made.
To who?
To the wife of an old friend.
Passport, please. Are you a diplomat, sir?
Yes.
Welcome back, sir.
Back in 1998, Tay had had one of the hardest jobs he'd ever been given by the Third Floor. To return to his posting in Stockholm, alone, and break the news to the wife of his colleague that her husband had been purged and that collective punishment awaited her and her children back in Pyongyang.
Daddy!
Hiya!
Where's my daddy?
Where's Jung?
I'm sorry, Ari. He's gone to the country.
Is he still alive?
He gave me a letter for you. I must watch you read it.
Was my daddy behind you on the plane?
I'm sorry.
Daddy wants us to go and see him back home.
But we are home.
Pick up your sign, darling. We're going back to the house to get our things. You lured him back, Tay. An innocent man, and now us.
I had no choice.
You must make me a promise. If you ever, ever find yourself able to hold the hands of your loved ones and run, you run. Don't do this to them. Promise me.
They, like, teach you about the South Korean culture and how to live in South Korea and stuff. And then once you get into that, you're pretty much safe. And then that's when my parents started changing, you know, their perspective about South Korea and stuff.
North Koreans arriving in the South do receive a form of adjustment training and some initial financial help. But for many, the South is just too stifling, too competitive, and often there is prejudice against North Koreans.
And, like, it's really, really, like, harsh. It's also the competition. It's really cruel inside Korea.
For me, South Korea was very... It was a very overwhelming country to live in, because we used the same language, but then I couldn't understand, like, most of it. I felt so isolated in South Korea. I think we had really bad discrimination.
Once in the UK, North Korean defectors are invariably dispersed around the country. Rotherham, Liverpool, Bury, Manchester, Bolton. Ji-hyun Park went to Bury with her partner and son. She liked it and has lived there now for 17 years. Her son just got into a top English university and she recently stood as a Conservative Party candidate for the local council. She's also published a book about her experience, The Hard Road Out, One Woman's Escape from North Korea.
I want to join this British society, so that's why I do lots of different things. I'm just shouting in this society, I am here, because I know that I arrived in the UK, so my life is 100% success.
For many younger, single, more recent arrivals, like Yeojin and Segway, meeting other exiles is perhaps more vital. For them, life in a town where they are one of few, perhaps the only North Koreans, can be lonely and isolating. And so they gravitate to New Malden, suburban enclave of southwest London known as Little Pyongyang. New Malden had long been popular with South Korean expats in London. Many of the big South Korean brand names had offices in the area. Little Pyongyang has developed a vibrant social life, ways to connect. There are active churches that welcome both North and South Koreans, and organisations such as Connect North Korea. Here, younger exiles like Segway and Yeojin help the community with everything from A-level choices, uni applications, paying council tax, accessing health services, to starting small businesses, to build new lives in England.
An absolute key factor of our work is that North Koreans are working with North Koreans, and people do tend to open up in ways that they never would to me or to a South Korean. It just doesn't happen. Whereas with North Koreans, they feel comfortable and safe to share their experiences.
Michael Glendinning is the CEO of Connect North Korea.
How could you possibly even begin to properly understand what somebody's gone through in a labour camp? And tied to that is definitely a lot of guilt and disconnect from communities, because there is this overwhelming burden, I suppose, and guilt that they have left people behind in North Korea who are suffering day to day whilst they're able to live a new life. And it's very, very difficult for North Koreans to move forward because of that guilt and always thinking about their families and their friends.
To be a North Korean in Britain is to be a member of a small community that few people outside know about. While North Korea is often in the news, it seems far away and remote from British life. Segway went to local schools in southwest London and was always keen to explain his identity and heritage.
I have a couple of friends who are a bit younger than me, but they're North Koreans. But I think they're a bit embarrassed to say they're North Koreans. I'm proud to say I'm North Korean.
Even for those young people who have no lived experience of the North, the country still exerts a fascination. Should the political situation change in the DPRK, the regime fall, were Korea to be reunited again, many would want to return home, to their motherland, and help rebuild.
I want to go back to the country, and I want to visit my dad's hometown. Now I want to see the mountains and the, like, all these stuff that my dad saw and how he lived. And I do want to experience what kind of life that North Koreans live through.
It's 2016, and the world has changed for Tae Yong-ho. The family he thought was reunited looks set to be divided again. In Pyongyang, another round of vicious, fratricidal purging is taking place. There are enormous, life-changing decisions to be made.
Maybe if we all go back, this issue with the waitresses will blow over.
This is our chance.
How can I do this to the ambassador? He's ill.
I hope he'd do the same to you if the shoe were on the other foot.
You'd accept that kind of betrayal?
For the sake of my children, yes.
Our parents will be punished.
If it were our boys doing it to us, Would you understand?
Yes.
Then you must remember Ari's words. If you find yourself able to hold the hands of your loved ones, you run.
The boys will never see their grandparents again. Their aunts, uncles...
And one day they will thank us.
I feel I want to look the ambassador in the eye and tell him the truth.
You mustn't.
I have to go to work tomorrow.
Then just treat it like you would any other normal day.
Is there a replacement toner cartridge for the fax machine?
Discontinued here, so I've ordered one from a supplier in Venezuela.
When is that going to arrive?
End of the month.
Comrade Guan's list of counter-revolutionaries has come through, but there are blank strips down each page.
Comrade Ambassador, may I have a moment?
If it's about your son, Tay, I've tried, but there is really nothing I can do.
I wanted to ask after your health.
I'm fine.
Really?
It's just pressures of the revolution, but the way you've worked has helped me no end. If only more of the comrades had your spirit.
Ambassador, I formally request that Tae Yong Ho be prevented from leaving the embassy. I believe he is preparing to defect.
Don't be ridiculous. Tae's our most loyal man.
His son is not at school.
My son is not at school because he has a stomach bug.
Yesterday, I followed both Comrade Tae and his wife.
We're trying to buy medicine from the chemist.
And I believe he deliberately eluded me.
Why do you think that?
Because I waited from outside a bathroom and he was too long.
Guan, the poor man has gut rot. You can't blame him for taking his time.
That's not all, Comrade Ambassador. When offered a considerable donation by a senior member of the Korean Allyship Foundation, Taeyong Ho not only failed to submit the offer to Pyongyang, he actively discouraged the member making it.
Hold on.
I have a written denunciation to prove this.
I felt it would be better for the revolution if the fraternal comrade kept his money and put it to the amplification of his voice here.
How much money are we talking about?
£100,000.
No.
It was half the value of his estate.
And without it, he could be homeless.
That is no small sum, Tae.
Taeyong Ho is a traitor to the revolution, and I'm submitting his name for immediate return to Pyongyang for re-education. I advise in the strongest terms that he not be allowed to leave the embassy.
This is nonsense, Comrade Ambassador.
Is your son really sick?
Yes. I take seriously Guan's allegations and will face them squarely during tomorrow morning's criticism session.
I vouch for the Deputy Ambassador. It will be dealt with in the morning.
Thank you, Comrade Ambassador.
The most momentous decision a DPRK diplomat can make, or any citizen of North Korea for that matter, is the decision to run, to defect, to live with the massive consequences of collective punishment of your family and close colleagues. For someone as senior as Tae, there is also the knowledge that you will forever be at risk of assassination for betraying the regime.
Guan's men are outside. I can see them in a car from the bedroom window.
We're just going to the pub, nothing more.
They'll follow us.
Like they told us. We just get in there, sit at the table they've reserved, and wait. Are the boys ready?
Yes.
You take Sangnam's hand. I'll take Youngsa. Just cross the road to the pub.
Better?
Sorry?
Which son was feeling ill?
Oh, go and find our table. I'll see you in there.
See you there.
24-hour bug, was it?
That's right. You're going to sit out here all night or join us for the game?
And both sides are imperialists.
Guess you better stay in the car then. Keep dry.
We'll be right here.
Stop tapping your feet, boys. Make space for your father.
It's packed.
Are Guan's men going to stay there all night?
I expect so.
Won't that throw the whole thing off?
Miss Kitchener said she could handle it.
How?
She just said we should watch the game and wait.
As it happens, on the evening of June the 2nd, 2016, England played Portugal in a friendly down the road at Wembley. As for any England game, The nation's pubs were packed, cross of St George waved, pints sunk, songs sung. And in the 86th minute, centre-back Chris Smalling scored the winning goal for England. Pubs across the land erupted in cheers and chants. We know that it was around this time that Tay, O and their boys made a run for it. The two events, the Tay family defection and Chris Smalling's one and only international goal, might not be linked, but this is drama after all.
Tay! Is that who we're meeting?
Who?
Tay!
Oh, no.
Is this your wife? Heard a lot about you.
Ken, now is not a good time.
And your boys, is it? I'm Ken. I drove your dad around town.
Ken, with all due respect, now is not a good time for us to have a conversation.
Why not?
We're just here to watch the game.
I thought you didn't like football. Well,
I'm acquiring a taste for it.
Taste for Spurs, I hope.
Yeah, of course. Good evening to you, Ken.
I'm pulling your leg, Yong Ho. Come on. I'll stick it on in the car.
Stick what on?
The game. Clock's ticking.
We're waiting for you.
Of course. Do you really think the Foreign Office is going to let a North Korean diplomat roll around town in a random black cab?
You're not a real cabbie.
I am flattered that you think as much, but no. I'm just your bog-standard spook. Come on. Car's out back. I'm afraid it's not a pink limo, but you'll survive.
There are men waiting for us outside.
Yeah, don't worry about them. Right now, they're tied up with one of my lads outside. So come on. I'll put the footy on en route to Bryce Norton.
And so, at some agreed rendezvous, Tay and his family and their scant luggage were swiftly sped out of London along the Westway, onto the M40 in the direction of RAF Bryce Norton in Oxfordshire. After takeoff, the family disappeared until, in August 2016, the South Korean government confirmed that Tay and his family were under their protection. The defection was a massive embarrassment to the third floor in Pyongyang, with the North denouncing Tay as human scum. Integration into South Korean life was easier than for many other North Korean exiles arriving in Seoul, or for that matter, New Malden. Tay was provided with round-the-clock protection and a job in a think tank. Then, in 2020, Tay entered South Korean politics and won election as the MP for the Seoul district of Gangnam, the first North Korean to win a National Assembly seat. In 2024, South Korea's president appointed him Secretary General of the Peaceful Unification Advisory Council. Both Tay and Oh have written memoirs. Their boys maintain low-profile lives for obvious reasons. Back in London, the fallout was severe. Many personnel changes occurred at the Ealing Embassy. Tay has said, "I'm sure that my relatives and my brothers and sisters have either been sent to remote, closed areas or to prison camps. And that really breaks my heart."
Is it in there?
Ambassador Hyun's called me a traitor to the revolution. My own sister calls me a rotten scumbag. Not even an animal. The boy's all right.
Yong Sop's found some trading card shop. Says his collection from England's going to be worth a fortune.
Good for him.
I ordered you a Kwabegi donut. If you eat it all, I'll revolutionise you myself.
The milk bread here's got nothing on yours.
Oh, maybe I'll see if there's a South Korean version of Bake Off.
I'd watch. I hope one day we'll see the mountains again.
Me too. But home is just wherever you are.
Us and the boys.
Us and the boys.
The Defectors was presented by me, Paul French. The drama was written by Al Smith. Tay was played by Andrew Leung. O by Liz Sutherland Lim. The Ambassador, David K.S. Say, and Kwan by Dan Lee. Ken was played by David Hounslow, Hyuk by Nicholas Goh, Jay by Michael Miller, and Jang by Chris Liu Kum Hoi. Jenny was Ruth Everett, Ron Samuel James, Ari Rose Esconder, and the boy was Aurelius Eiderberg. The sound designer was Peter Ringrose, and the director was Sasha Yevtushenko. The Defectors was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 3.
On BBC iPlayer.
A wandering salamander. To find a mate, he sets out on an extraordinary journey that has never been filmed before.
Explore the wildlife and spectacular natural beauty of the Americas.
It's an epic journey where we search for the wild and the wonderful.
Narrated by Tom Hanks.
It's up close, it is shocking, and it's beautiful.
The Americas. Watch on BBC iPlayer.
It's 9:30, and time now here on Radio 3 for the first in a new series of the Evening Office of Compline. The service takes the form of a sequence of words and music, which provides a moment of stillness and reflection at the end of the day. For this first Sunday in the liturgical season of Lent, the period of contemplation and fasting for Christians in preparation for Easter, the office comes from the Church of St. Bartholomew the Great in London. The service begins now with a penitential introit by John Taverner, In Trouble and Adversity.